It's All Things Considered on WUOT. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Dr. Sherman Jackson is both an American and a Muslim. That puts him front and center on the debates over Islamic culture in the United States. He's been working to bridge the divides and provide some answers that he hopes both sides can use to understand each other better. Tonight, he brings that perspective to the University of Tennessee as a guest of the Religious Studies Department. He'll speak on the concept of Sharia and its interactions with U.S. laws and culture. Dr. Jackson sat down with me earlier today to talk about Sharia and what it means.
Sharia law, and that's something of a neologism, Sharia law. It's a very recent term. Traditionally, Muslims simply referred to Sharia as Sharia, or even as fiqh. Now, there's a distinction between Sharia on the one hand and fiqh on the other, which many people don't recognize. And that is this. Sharia is the battery of principles, rules, regulations that Muslims believe to be based in the Quran and the normative teachings of the Prophet Muhammad. And they seek, therefore, to extract from those sources basic rules of how to live a life in a manner that is God-pleasing and that will hopefully put them in a position to earn God's pleasure on the Day of Judgment. Of course, belief in the hereafter is a fundamental cardinal belief in Islam. And Sharia, in its basic sense, covers virtually every aspect of life on the one hand. And that is to say that it will have explicit injunctions about marriage or divorce or about war or about buying and sales. And it will also have injunctions about ritual, prayer, fasting, and the like. But I think that what lots of people don't understand are two things. One is that while Sharia, on the one hand, addresses a broad category of issues from virtually every aspect of life, it is also limited in its jurisdiction. And so, for example, and this is one of the things I'm going to talk about tonight, there is nothing in Sharia that could dictate to us what the legal age of driving should be, for example. Muslims, and in this case in America, in negotiation with non-Muslims, would simply have to debate those issues out. And those debates would be based on things like safety, efficiency, etc. And Sharia would pose no barrier to Muslims and non-Muslims being able to come together and discuss these kinds of issues on an equal footing. That's the one thing I think we want to make clear. The other thing is that there is a distinction between Sharia as the ideal battery of injunctions that God and His messenger have laid down on the one hand, and then the human attempt to understand those injunctions on the other. Sharia refers to the ideal. Fiqh, which is what most Muslims deal with, refers to the human attempt to understand and apprehend the meaning of these. And in that capacity, the human community will invariably disagree on aspects of what they understand from those ideal sources. And so in Islam, in Islamic law, there's a huge amount of pluralism and diversity. And so Sharia, or fiqh, does admit of a multiplicity of views, all of which can compete for status as being orthodox or normative versions and articulations of Islam.
As of 2013, seven states in the United States had enacted laws forbidding judges to consider what is described as foreign law when rendering their decisions. And Tennessee is one of those states. North Carolina is another. 25 other states have at least proposed or brought up those kinds of laws. Now, in many of those cases, the laws have been modeled on a so-called model bill that was written by an anti-Sharia attorney from New York. Now, if those laws are designed to reduce the influence of Sharia law in the American judicial system, the natural question that comes into my mind is Sharia law influencing the American judicial system such that laws are necessary?
Well, I think that, you know, first of all, I would like to know what the population of Muslims are in those states where you have these Sharia ordinances. I mean, is this just a scare tactic, or is there actually, you know, some kind of fear about the incursion of Sharia law? That's the one on the one hand. On the other hand, I think that, you know, we're losing sight of something, and that is the American Project is a project that is fundamentally founded on religious freedom and pluralism. And I think the question is not to sort of generate all this fear, and much of it false fear, about this monster called Sharia law. I think the question is, Can Muslims in America recognize, in good conscience, the constitutional provisions that regulate the manner in which we negotiate our issues as a society? And if they recognize those provisions, what difference would it make whether the values that they're bringing come from Sharia law or from some comic book? They're recognizing the manner through which we as a society have agreed that we will negotiate our differences, and those differences will come out with some kind of negotiated result, and that will be the law that we through which we regulate our affairs in America. So I don't understand why it is that any kind of quote-unquote influence from values that happen to be from Islam or Judaism or Christianity, for that matter, should be automatically banned from consideration in an American context. I mean, isn't that the whole point of a First Amendment?
One of the concepts, in fact, that you'll be talking about tonight is that protection from foreign or religious law in the judicial sense is already something that's built into the Constitution and federal law. Tell me more about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, just as you said, I mean, look, I think the question of Muslims taking over and imposing Sharia law and banning non-Muslims from drinking alcohol or selling pork and these kinds of things, these are all fallacies. These are all based on fundamental misunderstandings of Islam and of Sharia. And I'll talk about this also tonight. Traditionally, Sharia has always recognized the right of other communities to follow their own religious laws, to drink wine, to eat pork, to worship their gods, to raise their children as they see fit. In fact, Sharia law, using the neologism that has become popular now, even exempted non-Muslim communities from certain criminal sanctions that would normally apply even to Muslims. So the idea that, you know, Sharia is going to take over America and impose upon America a singly religiously dictated way of life, this is simply just false. It's just false, and it's based on an unfortunate scare tactic that I think that really imposes upon us the duty to engage in more meaningful activities that are designed to educate Americans, both Muslim and non-Muslim, about what Sharia represents. And I think that the other thing that I want to say is that we have problems with our point of departure here. And by that, I mean the following. Most Americans, I think, tend to think that Islam is and can only be whatever it is or has been in the Muslim world. And so the discourses of the Muslim world are considered to be the discourses of Islam. And in that context, the understanding then is that American Muslims will seek to do in America the same things that Muslims in the Muslim world seek to do in the Muslim world. But our point of departure is as people who were born in America. The constitutional provisions are a part of our birthright. And the real question for Americans and Muslims to be discussing in this context is, can American Muslims, do American Muslims, and can they, in good conscience, endorse, embrace, and uphold the constitutional provisions without any sense of violating their own religious values and without either directly or indirectly trying to sneak Sharia in as a means of imposing some kind of religious order on other Americans? That's the real conversation that we really need to be having. And I think in that context, it's very clear Sharia is not in the business of imposing itself on American society. It is not in the business of rejecting the Constitution or trying to replace the Constitution. American Muslims are very much at home with the constitutional order of America, and there's no reason to assume that Sharia in any way will try to undermine or destroy that in any way.
Part of the reason that you've come to East Tennessee is, at least in part, to help foster that community discussion, the broader public discussion about misconceptions around Sharia and what it's actually about. And you touched on this just a second ago in your answer, but I'd like to expand on it if possible. What is the ideal template for that kind of discussion? How do we talk productively among ourselves about Sharia without falling into these emotional or fear-based arguments that you're talking about?
Well, I think that as in any attempt to communicate effectively, I think the first thing that we need to do is, it's a sort of chicken and egg kind of thing, but we really need to build up trust and confidence. if you don't trust me, it doesn't really matter what I'm saying. You can't hear my words, and they cannot in any way transform the way that you think. So I think that we need more and more intimate spaces within which we can exchange. And I think that these kinds of exchanges will hopefully build trust between the interlocutors, and that can ultimately lead to some kind of genuine communication. One of the things that I try to bring to the discussion is that, you know, I'm an American convert, and what that means is that my point of departure as a Muslim is America, and I am very much invested in my American identity as much as I am in my Muslim identity. And I want to share that with other Americans so that they understand that when they're talking to a Muslim, they're not talking with some non-American or some alien or someone who stands against America. They're talking to a fellow American. And I think that those kinds of points of departure can greatly enhance our ability to communicate about Islam.
Dr. Sherman Jackson is a professor at the University of Southern California who lectures on and specializes in religion, American studies, and ethnicity. Dr. Jackson, our sincere thanks for being with us today on All Things Considered.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate it.